Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse.
I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Stand clear.
Oh. Hey, welcome back to Dr. Homebrew, everybody. We have a great show for you today. We have a fest beer, first of all. Which is not necessarily a style we get a ton of, and I like these shows. These shows are fun because we get to talk about different flavors other than, oh, there's no hop burn. Cool. You know, what one malt did you use for your IPA? You know, it's that kind of stuff. We get
to
it. Well, there you go.
Also, it's the perfect time of year for a fest beer because, Oktoberfest.
Yeah. You know, before we get started, you know, I'm going to talk about the chat for a second, because I was bitching in the last show about cleaning, and William in the chat says, come on, JP, it doesn't take much to clean. Yes, it does. Even just a little amount it takes to clean, I don't want to do it. I know it doesn't take much, I don't want to do it. I don't like it. I dislike it.
You don't want to clean as a hobby.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't even want to clean I don't even want to clean as a chore. You know what I mean? Stepping over garbage. I don't want to do it. It's not what I like. It's not what I like to do. I don't know what I like to do, but it's not that, William. There you go. I'm just kidding. All right. Thank you to our sponsor, Five Star Chemicals. Speaking of cleaning, if you want to clean and sanitize, first of all, nobody wants to clean. That's just a fact. I don't think anybody really enjoys it except Howard Hughes maybe, but he probably went a little too far with it, if you know what I mean. Without the pee in the jars. If you want to be cleaning at home and you want to do it right, you use Five Star Chemicals. Go to fivestarchemicals.com today, right now. Pull your car over. I don't care if it's on the freeway. Pull over. Pull up. No, don't really do that. But look at their website. They have a bunch of tips and tricks and a bunch of different products for you to help you clean and sanitize. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for their free Homebrew Club program in one of the links in today's show description of the podcast or over there on YouTube to receive free product, exclusive discounts, monthly educational seminars, and free swag. Everybody likes to get free shit.
You want to hear you want to hear a quick Howard Hughes story?
Define quick.
My grandfather told a lot of crazy stories.
Yeah.
The one story I believe, he managed a mine in Nevada, like in the 30s or 40s. And he said, this is why I believe him. He said he was pretty much the only guy there. He was working real late. It's like midnight-ish, and this guy rolls up. He's like, who's this guy come up to the mine? And it was Howard Hughes, who owned the mine. And he asked he had my grandfather take him around for like 3 hours and asked him like an infinite number of questions, and then he was satisfied and left. And that's not a tall tale type of story. That's like a thing that happens when your boss is really weird.
Yeah.
So I actually believe that my grandfather had like a 3-hour conversation with Howard Hughes about his mine in like 1938.
That's wild.
Wow.
That is wild. David, do you have a Howard Hughes story?
No, I don't.
Oh, that's too bad. You're fired. Get out of here. No. Dave, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So you brewed a fest beer. Is this something that you have done before?
Not a fest beer. I've done an Oktoberfest before. But...
You know, an Oktoberfest before. How long have you been homebrewing, man?
9 years.
9 years. Okay. All right. That's not bad. I don't know that I've actually even tackled either style. They seem kind of complicated. Was it a little daunting for you, or you wanted to do it, or are you just trying to like brew the styles, or you got bored one day, or why fest beer?
I didn't do either Oktoberfest or fest beer last year, and just wanted to do it this year.
Okay, yeah, basically just because I wanted to.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Sometimes that's a fine answer, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a challenging beer to brew. There's not. It's a lager, and you got to do that right. There's not a lot to hide behind. No. It's, mostly kind of Munich-y characters, and
maybe that's why I haven't done it. I need shit to hide behind. That's why I like porters and stout. I like to hide. Cooper, since you got a break from the last show, because we judged your beer, why don't you go ahead and start on David's Fest beer here?
You're going to make me work?
Yeah, oh, man. Sorry, dude.
All right. Okay. Well, so the bottle has a pretty good fill. It's a little bit on the low side, but that's okay. When I opened the first one, it had a really nice hiss. Let's see. I'll get it on mic this time. Sorry. That was a letdown. But well, I had my headphones on, so I couldn't hear if it really hissed that much.
It did not. It was officially a letdown.
Now I'm pouring it into my glass. Can you hear that?
I chalk that up to audio because I don't hear that either. I think your windscreen is so effective, it managed to muffle the hiss. You bobbled the hiss with your windscreen.
Okay. So in the nose, it's got a clean and lightly toasty aroma, a prompt, medium-low herbal hop, slightly biscuity and bready, no obvious fermentation-derived esters, no DMS or diacetyl. It was slightly grainy to me as it warmed, I felt. Pretty close for aroma. I gave it a 9 out of 12 there. Color-wise, appearance-wise, this one seems... Yeah, the head just fell completely flat on this sample. If I had to adjust on the fly like Char sometimes does, I might have to bump it down one just because the head lasted a little longer on the other bottle I had last night.
Mine kind of jumps off, too. Kind of just, it's there and then it goes.
But the color is really nice. It's got this rich, orangey, light gold color, medium white head of fine bubbles that recedes on the sample I had last night to a more wispy cover and a collar after a moderate time. So it stuck around okay last night. And the beer is clear. It's very clear. You can see right through it, no problem. Kind of orangey highlights there. Flavor-wise, it's got kind of an overtly bready, doughy malt flavor with a medium-low sweetness. It seems cleanly lagered, which is nice. It doesn't dry out quite as much as hoped, or else there's something that's giving me a little impression of, lingering, kind of a sweet bread-like impression. That kind of stays long into the aftertaste. There's something grainy lingering in the aftertaste with that. And the bitterness is low. I think I might have a little bit of DMS here, which is, not detracting too much there or anything like that. But it's just not as much of the toasty flavors that I got some toast in the aroma. The toasty flavors aren't coming through as much, or else they're kind of obscured a little bit. No, finish wise, it's not like a sweet beer. It does finish semi-dry. It seems to be kind of where it should be there. And I'm not getting any obvious flaws other than maybe just a little bit of that edge of some DMS. Mouthfeel wise, 14 out of 20 for flavor. And I'd given it 3 out of 3 for appearance. I would give this one 2, but I don't need to be cruel.
sure you do. You're a judge. Yeah. That's what you do. That's what beer judges do.
Mouthfeel wise, it's medium bodied with no warmth. The beer is fairly smooth. It just wasn't quite as crisp and quenching as hoped. These beers, I mean, they're served in the liter, the Maßstein in Germany, for Oktoberfest, and they should be really crisp and quenching and smoothly drinkable. And this one's not biting or harsh or anything like that. And it is somewhat creamy. There's no obvious astringency or anything going on in here. It's just not quite as crisp as I would like.
Do you think that's a carbonation factor, or do you think it's a recipe thing?
I'm starting to think that it might be carbonation factor. It has, on the one I noted last night, it has the impression of like kind of a medium low carbonation. I think maybe the hiss that I heard either was louder for some reason, or I just, but it did. I think the sample I had last night was probably even more carbonated than this. This one's a little bit flatter. Sometimes it is hard to get the perfect amount of carbonation in a bottle, but this should be a pretty effervescent beer, at least medium to, towards medium high carbonation, perhaps. Seems like overall a cleanly brewed fest beer, which, with a lot of good, genuine ingredients and pretty good brewing process to get it right in that territory. Maybe it just needs a bit more attenuation, maybe a little more carbonation to, you know, A, kind of soften that malt sweetness, and B, kind of drive a little bit more thirst quenching quality to the beer. Have it dry off the tongue a little more crisply and refreshingly. You know, obviously, as you do with any good German lager, use a massive starter and classic lagering techniques. I'm sure you know what you're doing after 9 years on that front. But yeah, it's a good beer. I really enjoyed it. I would put it in very good territory. With the 1 point deduction for the head, I landed at a 35. I gave it a 36 last night, but I'll go 35.
Right.
Yes, it's nowhere near sweet or cloying. I didn't want to give that impression, but there's something. Maybe just with the carbonation lacking a little bit, it's giving that impression of some sweetness from the malt that's staying a little longer than I'd like into the finish and the late palate.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it doesn't taste like a fermentation byproduct. It definitely tastes more like flat cold beer.
Yeah,
yeah.
As I keep tasting it, it is plenty toasty, like toasty yeah. malt flavors, but.
Which usually I like.
Alongside that, you have that yeah. prickly carbonation driving them a little harder. So
yeah.
that's my take on it.
Okay.
Very good. Yeah, 35, 36 point beer.
All right. Char.
Yes.
Let's do it.
So,
why don't you be nicer
David,
than Cooper?
I'm not the guy that's your niceness cleanup batter on the show, probably. Maybe I am. I don't know. That could be my role.
We're not playing good cop, bad cop here.
Yeah. No.
So, David, I have to ask, because this talking about my role on the show, are you in a homebrew club?
No, I'm not.
So you're just making good beer by yourself, and that's a good thing.
Lone wolfing it.
You're lone wolfing it.
Based on your t-shirt, you know, the Imperial Beer Project.
Yeah.
Yeah, Vito, sadly had to close the doors. We were there on the last night they were open.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
My first time there was the last night they were open, and Vito couldn't attend because I think someone in his family had COVID. They had some really good beers. Anyway, that could be a club.
Sure.
Imperial beer Project fans. Yeah. So I like this beer. Thank you for sharing it with us. Aroma, I got a medium toasty malt aroma. Thought it was pleasant and inviting. Classic German bread crust aroma, kind of like a fresh baked, you know, something you bake at home, like an artisan bread. Low herbal hop aroma, no obvious off aromas for 8 out of 12. Appearance, 2 out of 3. Deep golden color. The head in my sample was small and not persistent, and I may chalk that up to my glassware rather than your beer. I mean, I've simply, you know, I hand wash stuff, and I do my best, but things don't always work out the way you want them to with hand washing. So that might be, that easily could be on problem on my end. Crystal clear. Again, 2 out of 3 flavor. Initially, the flavor to me was malty. I got a little bit of that doughy kind of bread dough that Cooper picked up, but I also got like a little bit of honey caramel sweetness, which to me, that's not something that ideally should be in a fest beer. And I was wondering, you know, one of the things we'll talk about is when you brewed this, I wonder if that might be just a little bit of oxidation. Because sometimes in a good beer like this, oxidation doesn't come across as paper or cardboard. It comes across a little more honey or caramel. I still did get the bread crust character in the aroma or in the flavor. Bitterness balances in mid-palate. It's well attenuated. When I first poured this and it was colder, the finish arrived pretty quick. And as it warmed up, the finish is definitely longer and malty and pleasant. But it does still have some of that little bit of that hint of that honey and caramel. So I gave that 14 out of 20 for flavor. Mouthfeel, 4 out of 5. Medium body. Carbonation is medium low. To echo what Cooper had said, I think a little bit more carbonation would really have helped this beer. Very slight warming, more creamy than astringent, 4 out of 5. Overall impression, 7 for a total of 35. Which is very good. And I was kind of my thinking about this beer. It might be that this hint of what I perceived as oxidation was really just maybe a little bit of low carbonation that let the malt just sit on your tongue a little bit too long to give that impression that maybe wouldn't have been there if it had been a little bit more carbonated. There's no apparent off flavors other than that maybe little bit of oxidation. I think it's a good beer, and I really appreciate your sharing.
Very good. Yeah, I would just echo, you know, echo all that. I don't want to dogpile on you about carbonation, but but get it together.
Carbonation's hard. Okay. Carbonation's really difficult to do.
Oh, yeah, it sucks, dude. I hate it. I hate it. It's terrible. It's a terrible thing. Even kegging, I'm like, I don't want to. Maybe that's part of my problem, too. I'll chuck up the cleaning. Anyway, David, what's up, man? Let's go recipe. You want to give us your recipe first?
All right. It was a 10-gallon batch I did, or 12-gallon batch. It was 8 pounds of Munich, 6 pounds of Vienna, and 10 pounds of Pilsner, all Weyermann. I think it was just too much Munich, I think. And then 2 ounces of Elotron Mittelfru for 60 minutes and 1/4 ounce of Magnum and 1 ounce of Mittelfru 10 minutes, Oktoberfest lager blend from Y-Yeast. Did a two-stage starter, and then I like to let it sit overnight, pitch it at 45, I'll drop the cold break, and then put some in this flask and stir that back up and then pitch that. And then it started out at 1054 and went down to 1010.
Nice and dry. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's good attenuation.
Yeah. What do you think about his recipe? Is it too much Munich, like he said?
Maybe a little heavy on the Munich, but I like that the recipe is fairly simple, just the three malts and the one yeast and a little bit of neutral hop and the bittering and a little bit of, you know, the hops are not too heavy by any stretch of the imagination. They're right where they need to be. That part was good. Yeah, I think it's probably mainly just a bottle carbonation. And what's your bottling technique? A beer gun or a?
Yeah, it's a beer gun. First time using it, actually.
Okay.
I haven't bottled anything in 8 years.
Yeah. That's probably what happened. You just need to fine-tune
the beer gun's a great product, but it's tricky, and it's not foolproof.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the line it comes with. I probably got to replace the line.
Yeah.
Let's do a beer gun 101.
I mean, we could, honestly, but yeah, I don't know.
Okay. We could do an episode called Your Carbonation Sucks, and pretty much it would apply to everyone in the audience, including all of us.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Well, what do we think? I mean, recipe is fine. We're okay with it. We just more carbonation next time and see what's up. How does this taste off the keg, David? Does it taste different than in the bottle or what?
I tried a bottle of it last week. The carbonation was a lot better last week.
Okay.
Which you guys just had right now. So
yeah,
maybe it just sat and lost a little bit more. I don't know. Maybe the seal is bad. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well,
tastes about the same what I had a week ago.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's seems like a really good recipe and good technique, and you're starting really, really cold there. That's what you like to do with your lagers. That's cool. I mean, you can, you know, and do you ramp it up a little, you know, as you go along slowly, or do you just go up and do a diacetyl rest at the end?
No, after 24 hours, I'll let it get up to like 48, and then like a day later, I'll go to 50. And then after like a week, I'll go up to like 52 maybe.
Cool. Yeah, you got great attenuation. It is, like I said, it did have that you know, fairly dry finish. It's not you know, cloying, but it's just there's the impression of sweetness, like maybe from the fruitiness from that Munich malt, and combined with the slightly low carbonation, letting that shine a little bit in these bottled batches. But I'd love to taste it off the keg there. And you know, the sample I had last night was a little better than this one, but just minorly. The head fell really flat. I don't know what's. Well, yeah.
I think you can get bottle variants when you're hand bottling like that. You know, even on a beer gun, even on, you know, just the thumb faucet with the tube down it. Like, just, I think it just happens. You know?
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's part of it.
What you want to do if you're entering for a competition is to increase the carbonation in your keg, you know, ever so slightly. You know, a fraction of a volume of, you know, CO2 to, you know, to get it to that point where it's, when it comes out of that bottle, it's going to be at that, you know, perfect level for the judges. So
David, do you have any questions for the guys based on their feedback?
No, I'm pretty good.
Okay. Guys, do you have anything else for David? Or are we kicking him off?
Question about water. Okay. Did you go for a certain profile there?
Whatever Beersmith had told me for the... Yeah. Well, I used like the Beersmith app and then the...
Bavaria.
And then whatever... I think it was a Palmer. I think I looked at Palmer's recommendation.
Yeah. So it was kind of a moderate sulfate, you know, pretty, you know.
Well, Brentwood water sucks. I got the, I got the water filter system, like the whole house. And then I go through another carbon block and then add a little bit of calcium chloride and gypsum and then just lactic acid in the mash.
Yeah. I don't think it's too minerally at all. It's the water balance seems right.
Yeah. I think it's, I think it's good.
Right to me.
Yeah. Are you going to make any changes, David, do you think? Or
yeah, drop the Munich down, I think, next time.
A little bit, yeah. All right. I'm working that carbonation.
Unless you guys think it stays, I don't know. What do you think?
Now, if you do enter in a competition, just...
I think you could drop it a little bit.
Yeah.
If you drop it a little bit, don't do something crazy by dropping it like 4 pounds. Drop it maybe a pound.
Oh, okay.
How many pounds did you have in there?
It was 8 pounds.
Okay.
The Munich.
I liked the flavor that it brought.
Yeah.
And to me... maybe I'm just, my taster could be off, and if I could be an outlier here, when I got that hint of caramel, is it wasn't to me like Munich, it wasn't a malt character, it was like a little bit of an oxidation character, and that can come from, you know, sometimes you're hand bottling off a keg or something, you can get oxidation or weird stuff like that can happen. But I think if you're going to drop the Munich, I wouldn't do anything crazy. I'd drop it a little bit and see what you think.
Yeah,
and then if you don't like it, then drop it some more next time.
Yeah,
Replace a pound with the Vienna and see where that goes. That could be real nice.
Yeah, it's a great idea, Brian.
Yeah, I think you're the 80-85% there.
Yeah,
yeah, good stuff.
Good.
All right, David. Well, we'll let you go, man.
All right, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right,
thanks,
dude.
Much for entering.
Thanks, man.
Later. All right, we're gonna take a quick break. Everybody, we'll be right back here on Dr. Homebrew. Stay tuned.
What's up, homebrewers? Hey, let me ask you a question. You spend a lot of time making your beer taste the way you want it to, right? Some of you even send beers into Dr. Homebrew for feedback. Well, the next logical step in your creativity is to craft some labels for those beers. And there's nobody better at creative labels than GrogTag. Their easy-to-use designs let you turn out some pretty amazing stuff like labels, bottle caps, coasters, even six-pack carriers with minimal effort on your part. They have a range of label sizes that fit any vessel you can think of. Bottles, cans, growlers, kegs. GrogTag has you covered. Head over to GrogTag.com today and check out their line of amazing, fully customizable templates and get your beer looking its best. GrogTags are water resistant, reusable, and will have your naked bottles looking great in no time. That's GrogTag.com and be sure to use code BNARMY at checkout to save 10% on your order.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small 4-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up, you might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Games.
Dr. Homebrew, please report to the ER for a code blue. Dr. Homebrew to the ER, please. No, and your tea time has been moved to 2:30.
All right, thanks for sticking around, everybody. We are going to talk to Brian Schar a little bit about judging at the BJCP, at the GABF. Brian Schar, yes. You went out to Denver, or Denver adjacent, for the Great American Beer Festival judging. So Louisville, is that where NHC was the first time it was in sort of Denver adjacent, where everyone's like, oh, we're going to go to Denver, and you had to take the fucking tram 20 minutes out to do anything, and we just had a hotel?
I didn't go to that NHC, so I couldn't tell you that.
That pissed me off.
It was funny. I was you know, when I got my invitation to go out there, I just assumed it was Louisville. And I got corrected by some locals right away that it was Louisville.
Oh, yeah.
Which is good because it keeps it from being even more confusing than it could be.
How can JP be annoyed by things that he didn't even do? That's what I
want to know. No, I went
have
to,
you met JP?
I went to the NHC that I was talking about. And I remember hearing that it was in Denver because that was back when, and I don't know if they still do this, but that was back when the NHC was like marketing as the next big town over, you know, where it's like, oh, like Denver. I was told we were going to Denver, sir. Nope, you're going 20 minutes away from Denver.
Well, the Brewers Association is based in Boulder, so
I understand.
Yeah. And Denver's got like, you know, 30 suburbs, so it could have been Longmont. It could have been, you know, any number of L. There's like three different L suburbs.
Yeah, that was weird. It was just weird. It bummed me out. I was like, oh shit, okay, because you had to go. You had to get on the train. You had to walk. First of all, you had to walk a quarter mile to the tram station. And get on the train.
Oh, no, not walking.
And then go all the way into town. And then you had to catch it to make sure. It sucked. I like it better when it's in Denver proper. You know, but whatever. I understand.
Yeah.
Look, that was 10 years ago. Who cares?
Mm.
Or longer.
Probably longer.
God, yeah. I've been doing this a long time. All right, Char. So you went to Longmont, Louisville.
Louisville.
Okay.
Yeah. And I, you know, the details, obviously I can't talk a lot about some aspects of the details, but I was excited.
Why not?
The first time I've,
why can't you?
I can't, you know, don't, I really can't tell you what panels I was on or what my,
oh, you can't really,
I can't. No.
Why not? Has it been announced? I'm interrupting you and I don't care. Has it been announced? I mean, is that why?
No, it hasn't. No, it hasn't.
So, okay. When is GABF?
In a couple of weeks, I believe. I think it's October 5th and 6th.
They do it that far in advance?
There's three sessions, yeah,
there's,
right?
There's, oh, wow. You know, 5,000, 6,000 entries. I mean, it's like Homebrew Con.
I guess
there's
just
a lot of beers to judge.
I guess I just assumed that it was all that like week, because every time you go out at the end of the GABF sessions, you run into the judges that are just fucking hammered or tired or both. So I just assumed that they were just putting you guys through the ringer, but I mean that makes sense. They bring out a, you know, chunks at a time.
Yeah, you know, it's but what I can talk about, and what I think is kind of interesting, maybe for our listeners, is some of the differences between like homebrew judging and GABF judging.
Yes,
and you know, GABF, there's three flights in the morning and three flights in the afternoon, and each flight is about 10 beers, so you're judging about 60 beers a day. And when you start at 8:30 and you're done at about 3, you know, you don't really get drunk. You get a little tipsy, but when you drink all day at that level, by the time 3-4 o'clock rolls around, maybe it's because I'm getting older, I was just wiped out like pretty much every day.
Yeah.
And I remember one day, like the second day, I went back to the hotel and I had a nap for like an hour. And I got up and I'm like, God, it's like 5 o'clock. I should eat something. And there's a place, like a tap house that was about a 10 minute walk from the hotel. It's close. I'll just go over there. I won't bother Ubering. I'll just go there and I'll have some food and I'll have a beer. And it was a fantastic beer. And it was a struggle to finish that. Really, at the end, after an end of a day like that, that's just not what you want.
I tell you, man, whenever I go out and, you know, do NHC or do these beer like vacation things or these beer event things or whatever, when I go out, the last thing I want to drink is a beer, and I'm not, you know, judging 60 different beers. Yeah. So you go and like towards the end of the night, you start switching to cocktails, start switching to the gin and tonic.
Yeah, maybe I should have done that night. That would have been a lot better.
Yeah, that's what we did after. NHC too.
You got because beer
so
only,
much judging.
It takes you so far. It only gets you so far, and you don't want to be one of these people where you feel like you have to drink a beer because you're a beer guy.
Yeah,
and you have to be seen drinking the latest craft beer when you're or whatever. It's like, dude, I don't even care. Matter. Yeah.
Thankfully, I don't really give a shit about what people think about me in that regard.
Well, you're right. But, you know, the royal like, you, right?
Yeah. Exactly. But, you know, in terms of judging process, one of the things I thought was really interesting. So, you know, in a homebrew competition, you might have, let's say, however many beers in a flight. And the steward brings out to everybody one beer and you taste it, you know, you smell it, you write down your score sheet, and you have a discussion about that beer. You're done with that sample, you move on to the next one. And it's very, that protocol is kind of burned into our brains. For GABF, it's a little more like mini best of show. They bring you out however many beers are in the flight all at once. Well, usually the stewards can't carry that many. You might get four at a time. And your flights might be anywhere from 6 to 12, depending how big the category is. So you write down your score sheet. And it's a little more like a homebrew con, you know, any national homebrew comp sort of score sheet. There's places to write, but there's also more things to like check this box. So there's not quite as much writing involved as in like a BJCP comp. And then after you write your score sheets for all the beers that are in that flight, then typically what will happen is that it's kind of like best of show, and you'll have the judges on your panel, and it's going to be two or three judges, and you'll go through like in best of show, say, all right, what ones did you not like? Or which one did you not like? And each person can kind of kick one out until you get to maybe like, you know, five or six that are left. So it's a little bit different than in a way it's more efficient because you don't have to talk about every beer and come within 7 points of every beer. And you know, it has to be more efficient because there's just so damn many beers to judge.
So when you say that everyone can kick one beer out, what happens if I kick out a beer that you love? Do you get a chance to be like, hold on, we got to talk about this?
No, typically it's like a best of show or a mini best of show where if, let's say, two people didn't like it very much, but you really liked it.
Yeah.
A lot of times it'll stick around. You can ask for, you know, and people will be like, you know, let's just keep this in for the time being. And then move on to the next person to kick one out. You don't have to take that approach. But it's the approach at the tables that I sat on.
Okay.
And like I said, the advantage is that you don't have to talk in detail about each beer.
Right. Or the question about a beer, this is sounding very similar to what I had to do at NHC, is, okay, was this a beer that you would fight for? Was it one of your top three? Because if not, out of these 9 to 12 beers, it's not going anywhere anyhow. So. Right. Let's just let it go now. You know, one person or two people really disliked it for one reason or another.
Now that's right. And if you're an experienced judge, unless you really think the other judges are wrong, and when you're judging with people that are really experienced and really familiar with beer and they're professional brewers and they're brewery owners, they know what they're doing, you know, you've got to really, I mean, if you really want to stand by a beer and fight for it, that's great. And you should, if you really think that's should happen. If you're not going to fight for something that might be in fourth place, you know what I mean? Just like you said,
right. Don't die on the hill for that. You know,
you're not going to die on a hill for something that nobody else thinks is that great and that you think might be in third or fourth place.
Okay. Interesting.
So, and then metal rounds are kind of similar. So you'll go through this first round stuff. I don't think it's telling anything that I shouldn't, and I don't think it should surprise anyone that there are a fuck ton of IPAs in that competition. West Coast, hazy, you know, whatever. And like there were the first 2 days, everyone had in the morning an IPA flight, and everyone had in the afternoon an IPA flight, because there's hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of IPAs.
So it's not, so you don't get to sign up for a specific category and then that's it. It's just sort of you show up.
They do in the when you register, they provide a web page, and they managed to make this thing for as many beers as are involved and as many volunteers and everything else. It runs really smoothly. And one of the things on the web page when you register, you can for each category. I mean, every single category in the Brewers Association guidelines, which by the way are different from the BJCP guidelines. There's styles that aren't in the BJCP. There's not as much description. There's a thing called strong pale ale. And I was like, hang on here.
Bro,
guys. Strong pale ale. Come. It's
there's
like
a lot
what
more
the hell?
Styles.
That's called IPA. Right. And yeah, there's more styles.
And are there more styles because more styles means more categories, and more categories means more sponsors, and more sponsors means more money? Or is it legitimately trying to like squeeze out in a positive way, define the world around us in craft beer. And if there's a new emerging style, well, we should acknowledge that.
I believe more the second category than the first.
Okay.
And if you can pull these guidelines, are they're not secret, but you can look them up online. They're readily available, and they generally track the BJCP. But then there's things like I wondered, like, where is this strong pale ale coming from? There's a couple that are just kind of weird. And like spice, herb, vegetable is broken up. I mean, there's a thing called field beer, which essentially is beer made with like savory ingredients that you grow in a field. Hence, it's called field beer.
Okay.
And spice is different. And, you know, spice herb is kind of a different thing.
Going back to the strong pale, because that makes me angry very much.
You're angry, JP?
I'm angry. It's the kind of anger Zoloft can't even suppress.
Mm,
no, it's
that's some anger.
It sort of makes a lot of sense now when I would see a pale ale at 6.1 or 6.5. Mm-hmm. I've seen a pale ale at 6.5% on a beer board, and it's like,
right.
That fucking makes me angry. It should not be that high. But if it's, I guess what I'm trying to say is the same old thing. On the beer board, if the brewers are brewing styles like strong pale ale, then they should market it as a strong pale ale, and the beer board people at the bar should put it on so as such. Don't call it a pale ale, but it's really a strong pale ale. Like either style guidelines mean something or they don't.
Yeah, well, no, I agree.
We're more familiar with the BJCP guidelines. There is a wide variety of concoctions that people out there in the craft brewing world are brewing, and you know, there's style creep that has happened from, you know, some of the existing styles that start out early in the craft beer movement, where pale ales have gone towards a little stronger. And if you differentiate between a classic strength pale ale and a strong pale ale, you can give those beers that people brewed a 6.1 or whatever a place to go, where it's like maybe a lower bitterness than an IPA, but a pale ale bitterness beer with a slightly stronger strength to be judged as such. I don't know. I'm just playing the devil's advocate here. Don't get angry at me, JP. Right.
It's interesting
to me how the guidelines are very similar to the BJCP, but there are some interesting differences. So then you have the like the first round for every style when you write your score sheets. And then I was lucky to be on, well, not like everyone's on some medal rounds. So the medal round is like the final round. So you'll have like, you know, 8 to 12 beers, and it literally is a best of show round. There's no score sheets. You go through, and ideally these are the best of the best, and you shouldn't be able to necessarily easily kick some out. But just as in a best of show round for homebrew, there's always two or three that you can quickly kick out. And then you have that discussion among the ones that are left about which one is really the more platonic ideal of the style and the best executed compared to the others. And what's kind of funny is they take to the table, there's an envelope, and there's the thing to write your numbers down on, and the envelope has like the sticker on it, and you're not going to close that. But when you take when the steward takes that number back to the cellar, and they put the actual beer name on there, that gets closed up, and kind of like Miss America or whatever, you know, the Academy Awards.
Price Waterhouse Coopers has audited this result, and
that goes into the vault. And then on the day that they announce that, they break the seal and read off who won. So I'm kind of curious for the categories I did metal rounds for, whose beers those were. That'll be kind of fun to see.
So you did metal rounds. So those categories are done.
Yes.
Interesting. So I wonder why you can't say anything about it.
They, you know, it's just general OPSEC. You know, they want to make sure that people don't say or do dumb things. Like, you're supposed to have your phone off all day aside from lunch. They don't want you taking pictures.
Yeah.
They don't want people to. And I get it, because like if it's IPA or something, who's going to tell which one is different? But if you're doing like a category where you have to declare specialty ingredients, then you can tell, probably you can tell what beer that is if you went and looked for it.
No, there's no way. I would.
Yeah. I mean, if it's really specific, you know, so there's certain beers.
I mean, if you have like a bright pink beer Okay, yeah. Maybe.
But, you know, I appreciate that they're trying to maintain their security and maintain the suspense and not have a bunch of idiots go yap on social media about
it's
saw or heard.
It's not a knock.
What I'm saying is nothing that's... I don't think I've said anything that the BA would be upset about.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, we love
just talking
BA.
About process.
Yeah, no, the BA is great.
I get that they don't want people to inadvertently, you know, compromise the process, even by accident, you know?
Sure. And again, I'm not saying they're doing anything wrong or it's stupid laws or stupid rules. Or I'm genuinely curious about why.
There's a lot of money in craft beer. This is commercial craft beer, not homebrew, right?
You know, sometimes, and to make an analogy, there's probably a bad analogy. Like, you'll see sometimes online where some Russian dude is, you know, invading Ukraine. And he's taking a picture of something.
It'll never happen.
He's by a building or something, and boom, he's violated OPSEC because you can geolocate that building with the shadows and the building and whatever. And boom, suddenly your selfie gets you killed by Ukrainian artillery. You know,
yeah, that's
and you
a
don't
weird,
think that can happen.
No, that's not a very good analogy. if you tell me like, yeah, I had to judge strong pale ales and there were a lot of good beers. Like, I don't feel like those are.
And
different.
Russian artillery dialed right in on us and killed us right afterwards. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. The BA just called in a strike on Char's home. And
conquered. Dude. Yeah.
The
right.
Missiles are coming.
Ken Grossman decided to, you know, I don't know, whatever. But it's fine. So it sounds like you had a good time.
Yeah, it's funny. You meet a lot of interesting people. And
what do you like doing?
You run into people that you've known before, and Pete Slosberg, everyone in the beer community knows Pete.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he's there. And I mean, you if you've been around the community for a long time, you run into a lot of people you already know, and you get to meet some cool new people. And, you know, it's fun. It's a good time.
What do you like judging? What judging experience as far as the actual judging, not, you know, going there and the attending and whatever? But the actual judging process, which do you prefer, the homebrew version or the GABF version?
I don't know that I have a preference. They're just different.
I hate that answer. That's a lawyer answer.
I'll tell you.
You know, I'll tell you a funny story that again they won't mind. Yeah. So it's in we judged in the Brewers Association warehouse, which and I'm like, why does the BA have a warehouse? So then you realize, oh. You're putting on big events every year like GABF and World Cup of Beer and Homebrew Con. All that stuff has to go somewhere.
Yeah.
All the TVs, all the curtains, all the miscellaneous whatever.
Yeah, and they
you need a lot of stuff
instead of renting it every year. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You need a lot of stuff to put on a big event. And that's got to go somewhere.
Yeah.
So we're in this warehouse in Louisville. And that's it's funny. There's you've probably seen that meme of. Like what my friends think when I tell them I'm judging beer versus what I'm actually doing.
Yeah.
And they think you're like, hey, you're having Oktoberfest and you're having five steins. And yeah, you're writing a bunch of stuff. We're sitting in a warehouse in Louisville writing about beer. So it's a warehouse and there's this bird that's overhead and it's trying to get out a window and there's pipes overhead and it sits over one of my judges I'm judging with on this one flight. And we look up and it's kind of right over him. And he's like, God, is it crap in my beer? And it sits there for a long time. And we're thinking probably it's sleeping or whatever. Pooped right on his shoulder.
Oh, man.
I would have gone
We shifted the tables after that. But yeah, you got poop on his shoulder.
I would have gone just walk through the warehouse looking for the t-shirts. I would have scored a free beer. Absolutely. Yeah.
At least it didn't go on the beer. That's good.
Yeah, and I always made sure. I made sure on day two and day three that I sat at locations where birds could not poop on me.
Smart.
I do not like to be shat upon.
Yeah. Not unless you're paying. You know what I mean?
Not even then.
No, I'll agree with the sentiment that at NHC and at HomebrewCon, it was a very fatiguing experience to judge such long sessions. And it sounds like at GABF, it's even longer. We would usually have 2 to 3 sessions in the morning and 2 to 3 sessions in the afternoon. And yeah, maybe 10, you know, 8 to 10 beers each, sometimes 12. But it was a lot of beer to get through and it really interfered with once talks started going on and stuff. And they didn't repeat the talks this year. Yeah, and I'm not complaining. I signed up to judge. And I,
no, it's part of the experience.
I did my
and that's
part.
That's what you want to choose. Yeah.
Well, and you can and download the talks later. They make them available.
Yeah, yeah, I got to judge some fantastic, you know, best, you know, metal rounds, which was really fun and really hard to do because the beer quality at that level is so intensely high. You just, it's like cutting fine hairs. It's like, oh, this yeah. one's just slightly this. Sorry.
Yeah.
And that's a fantastic beer. And, you
and that's,
to let
that's
it
what's
go.
Really tough when it's, you get to a medal round, just like the best of show for homebrew. And you get to those last, there's like, you can only award, you know, gold, silver, bronze. And there's five or six beers out there. And like, wow, how do we slice this? Well, these are all fantastic. How do we pick which ones are better than the others?
Hang on, everybody. It's Dr. Homebrew. We'll be right back.
The leader in affordable, high-quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all-stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome-plated brass towers, and Komos keeps your new tower cold with their air-cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward-sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Komos Kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Komos Kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from KomosDraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's KomosDraft.com.
Now, back to the examination.
And I'll tell you one thing that's also kind of interesting about judging commercial beer as opposed to homebrew.
Yeah.
You know, one of the, the style doesn't matter, but I had one flight where probably five or six of the beers tasted almost identical. And in homebrew, you're not going to get that because people are trying to come up with new stuff. They're creative. They're brewing with what they got in their garage.
Yeah.
Or they're just doing whatever. You're not going to have, it's rare to have two homebrews in a flight taste the same. And then you realize for commercial beer, whatever the style, the market wants what it wants. And if the market wants X, you're going to have a whole lot of brewers trying to brew X. So you're going to have a lot of entries in a lot of styles that are very similar to each other.
That is a good
point. Because they're trying to kind of dial in. And thankfully, none of those, but the category that happened in, there were like a couple, there were some standouts and there were some that weren't, and we didn't have to get into splitting hairs on the six beers that were identical.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a thing that I had never run across before in competition. And I thought about that for a while afterwards and realized that's why, because that's yeah, one of the commercial
sense.
Differentiators.
Yeah. The choke is probably a lot tighter on that because yeah. you got to be closer to hitting that target. And that's sort of the hard part is when yeah. you're not a brewer. When you're just a home brewer or fantasizing about being a brewer, you're thinking you're going to do all these different styles of beers and you're going to reinvent category and you're going to do all this shit. But then when you become a brewer and if you're, you know, lucky enough to own your brewery, mm-hmm. even more pressure to make money, and you have to brew the yeah. styles that people are buying, and you have to focus your attention and focus your craft and hone it mm-hmm. to appeal to the palates of people who are coming in to pay for it. Not to
just
yours.
Because you're a brewer doesn't mean you don't like to sleep indoors or eat.
Right. So, but and I guess that would make competitions a little bit harder even too, because you are sharing similar, you know, palates even more so across the judging.
Yeah.
Do you, and we'll wrap it up here in a second. Do you think that homebrew, because I guess what am I trying to say? Less people, I would imagine, enter craft brew competitions like GABF, like commercial competitions, mm-hmm. I guess I shouldn't even say craft beer, but commercial competitions for, you know, to win and for marketing purposes rather than to get feedback. I know there is a part of that, and some brewers do like the feedback of the different judges, but homebrew level, we've always sort of sold entering competitions as get feedback on your beer. But I think a lot of homebrewers also enter just for the hardware, but it definitely is more feedback oriented. Do you think homebrewing would be better served going to a commercial judging aspect where you're not filling out the sheets necessarily. You're not writing shit down. You're ticking boxes like they sort of have in the first round at Nationals. Or are we making ourselves a little bit more self-important by filling out full sentences with correct grammar?
There was no first round of Nationals homebrew scale wise this year. It was, you know, NHC was just all in one location. So it was pretty much the very similar model. It sounds exactly like what Brian's describing.
But to JP's point, I think there are two different audiences, if you will, or two different groups of people. There was like on day one, I was, there was one beer that was, I even forget what was quite wrong with it, but I was thinking it's probably a packaging issue. And one of the other judges who was a professional brewer is like, now when this is a, when you're entering GABF, the fact that you can package is taken as a given. You should be able to, as a professional, whether you're packaging from a tap room or a production brewery or whatever, it should be a thing that as a professional, you should know and understand how to do. And I think, having said that, I think a lot of professionals, especially if you're not a packaging brewery, face the same challenges on packaging that we do as homebrewers. But it's a different, I like a lot of things, I think when you're doing it for money, it's different from when you're doing it for fun. And when you're doing it as a hobby, we see it here on the show. I mean, we live in a time when there's so much more information, so many more resources available to people than there were 20 or 30 years ago. And part of that information and resources is homebrew clubs. But how many people come on the show and they're not in a club? There's nothing wrong with that. That's right. Great. I mean, do what you want. I mean, maybe you live too far away. Maybe you don't have time. Maybe you don't like people. Maybe you don't like the club. You know, maybe they meet in a day you can't go. I mean, there's a billion things that can happen. Mm. But the fact that there's so many people on this show that take the time to send their beer to us and talk to us about their beer and get feedback from us tells me there's still a lot of people in the homebrew world that need that feedback and they don't have a good mechanism to get it close to home.
Right. Right.
And when you're a professional, you're doing it for money, you have the time and you have the resources and when you're a small business owner, there's never enough time and there's never enough resources, but you are always, you're networked with other people in that same situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's like they told me, like talking about packaging the first day at GABF, there's a certain minimum level of competence that's assumed if you're a pro that maybe is not always warranted, mm-hmm. but there's a True. Certain minimum level of competence that you should have. And what you're trying to get at that point, I mean, people, when you're trying to meddle at GABF, I mean, some people it's like, you know, maybe you're getting a bonus. And maybe you're going to go out and try to get more investors. Maybe maybe that's something where you're going to get beer tourism, where someone's going to read, you know, home brewers or beer lovers are going to look at that list and say, oh, this place, a state over, they won gold for their blank and I love that style. Let's go drive on Saturday and go check it out.
I feel like
there's an economic aspect to that that's not there for homebrewing.
That is true. To counter to that, because there's always examples to prove the other side of any argument. But
of course,
you know, I know at least one brewer. I don't know if he really wants it out there, but you know, he would put that he won medals on his beer, and like nobody gave a shit. It was a sour beer, and maybe it was because of the style. But it's like it doesn't mean anything to me. And I would sort of have conversations with brewers over the last few years. That means less to them now. It means less to the consumer because it doesn't drive anything. What's driving craft beer right now is variety packs and the seasonal rotations on the handles. What's new
and that may well be.
And then your variety pack for your regional breweries. That's what's driving. That's what consumers want. They don't care about anything else.
I mean, remember like in the 90s when that was part of people's marketing, like GABF gold
winner.
That's
what I mean.
And that was like a big thing.
It doesn't matter as much anymore. On the other hand, you know, we've talked to a few homebrewers who've gotten funding because of the awards that they've won, but that's very rare. for the most part, you're right. It's just for ego boost and you know, which isn't a bad thing. We all need that.
No.
Or just, you know, pride, personal pride. But yeah, craft beer, like awards don't, they don't have the impact they used to do anymore. I mean, you don't even really see it on people's packaging anymore as much as you used to.
Well, I think it means something.
It does. It still means something.
Small brewery can win three or four medals at GABF. They're up and coming. They're doing good stuff.
That's right.
Yeah, but I don't think it has the same weight as it did 10 years ago.
I think the function of the score sheets and I think the function of the competitions are fundamentally different between professional and homebrew.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
Getting back to the function and keying in on something you said earlier. And this is something that bugged me about the way NHC is run. You talked about the beers coming out at a frantic pace. There were four, you know, you had a 12 beer flight, you would get them four at a time and three, and pretty soon they're all out. And you're on the first, second, third beer, getting down the line. I got down to that 10th, 11th, sometimes 12th beer. And I felt like, it was so warm and flat from sitting on the table that long before I could, and maybe it was my fault for not knowing and understanding the model as well, or never having judged GABF, to not think, oh, I got to get this through this shit really quick and just write a couple comments and then move on. I felt like I was giving short shrift to those 10th, 11th, 12th beers because they were warm and flat. I couldn't get anything out of them anymore. They were gone. And I felt bad for the brewers because I was like, this guy spent his $12 or whatever to enter it, maybe more now. I don't even know how much it was, but like I did my very best to give it a proper like evaluation, even though I give it the benefit of, okay, this is really warm, but it still has some really nice flavors and whatever. And the other ones, well, okay, this one's just gone and it wasn't great, but you know,
I didn't knock anybody for carbonation for that reason.
Yeah. Did you feel the same way? Did you feel like the earlier beers were easier to judge than the later ones, and that you might have passed over some beers that could have gone on if you had been in a different order?
I actually had a little bit of the opposite experience, where I remember on one flight, I thought the first beer was really good. And that was the first, someone else suggested to kick that first for diacetyl. I didn't get diacetyl. And I went back to it, you know, a half hour later, after I've been sitting out, I'm like, holy cow, whoa. I could barely, and it wasn't just diacetyl, I could barely stand to smell it because there were so many things wrong with it.
Wow.
So there is always that first beer bias. Hmm. And I judged with a woman on one flight that talked about doing an experiment with people she was training for judging a while back, where she poured three beers to have people judge, and they were all identical, but she didn't tell people that. And inevitably, the first beer was viewed to be the best. So there is that first beer bias. And part of that comes from it happens on this show. We talked about that earlier or the previous show about changing scores after you come back to something after it warms up. You know, it's all you can judge is what's in front of you. And if it changes while it's in front of you, it changes. That's the nature of the beast. And sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes it changes real bad, real fast. And that's a whoa, right. And you need to be aware of, you know, I think one of the good things I learned at GABF from that was when you're judging 12, before you say you're ready to go and you're ready, you need to go back and smell and taste those first two, three, four beers again, and just make sure that your score sheet is still accurate now that they've warmed up.
Yeah. And also it's like, smart. If you get to a beer at the end that is pretty clear and good, you know, even though it is warm and flat, you know, okay, well there wasn't, you know, anything really, any defect at that point would stand out clearly. So it must be a pretty decent example.
Yeah. You may have missed some of the brightness, you know, maybe there's some brightness or crispness you missed out on, but the advantage of letting it warm is that you're making sure when you come to it, if there's anything off, you know it.
Yeah. I think I need more experience in that style of judging. And, you know, probably if they do it the same exact way next year for NHC without a first round, I'll have to be ready for that. I kind of hope they bring back the first round personally, but that's just me.
Agreed. I totally agree with you, Brian.
But yeah, on the homebrew scale, I think people do want that feedback, and they want a fuller score sheet, at least for maybe, you know, from the first round. Once you get to the second round, exactly, that's another story. You're getting the best of the best and honing in on what's going to medal.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Good, all right. Good discussion. Thank you, Brian. You went, and thanks for doing your duty out there. And
for sure.
No, thanks, man. I was real happy to do it. I met some really cool people. I had a good time.
Birds did their duty too, I guess.
There were people that were sticking around for the second session. I did one session and that was enough for me.
Yeah, that's what I feel about judging too. I can't. It's yeah, tiring. Yeah. I want to say RIP Coolio, by the way.
RIP
yeah.
Again. We got to do it.
Yeah.
Brian Cooper, how can people get on this show, this lovely show of ours?
Well, you could just sit and wish and dream that you could be on the show talking to us and brew a really awesome beer and not send it anywhere. Or you could email Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com and I will get back to you in fairly short order and let you know how you could actually send it in to us so we could chit chat with you on this Zoom machine tell you either your beer's great or it needs a little improvement and here's how you do that. But yeah, we'd love to have it. Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com and send us a beer, mead, cider, sake, whatever you got.
Yeah,
kombucha. Dream big, dream being on Dr. Homebrew.
Whatever you got.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, we're going to get out of here. Thanks a lot for tuning in. I appreciate it. Until next time, we'll see you later.
Cheers.